If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
You know, I mean, I have a stat too, and it's what Cam Ward led the league in last year, which is drops from his receivers that made me scream as loud as I possibly could, because this was a complete disaster zone in the receiving room last year. Cam Ward would make some unbelievable throw. He'd roll out to his right, throw a dot, and then it would just either be dropped or some misfortune. It was a complete misadventure the entire year. He has no excuses in that regard now. Wandell Robinson's there to be a volume guy. Brian Daboll knows what he can do with that. And then Carnell Tate was basically the perfect pick when you consider that he's able to get separation down the field. His catch radius is massive. He's going to be a young quarterback's best friend. So that's how I look at this. This is going to be a really good fit even early in the season.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey. And joining me as always, the managing editor of Titan Size, the publisher of NFL Draft on SI, the Yada Yada King, my co-host, Justin Mello. Justin, today we are talking, did the Titans do enough this offseason to compete in 2026? Don't answer just yet. How's it going, my friend?
I'm doing well, doing well. I had my fingers crossed for the Yada Yada King introduction there, and I got it. Atlas with three legs says, I expect Justin Angry Mello to quadruple his effort on Titan Size since there's no podcast for the next couple, let's not say a while, for a couple episodes here. Really appreciate it, everyone. Mello, I read your article about the 27 draft, and it was great. Thank you, Ellie. I don't know which one. Alex, keep saying Ellie. Thank you, Eli. I'm not sure which one you're referring to. I've got quite a few articles out, but I appreciate it nonetheless. Assuming Jeremiah Love is your best man, says Rumham, which is pretty great. Good luck with the wedding, Graver. Assuming Jeremiah Love is your best man. No, Gary Soto is the best man, Rumham. You should know that by now. Over under 69.5 articles by Mello over the next 2 weeks. I might disappoint Iron Grids. I don't know that I'm going to fill that time with more work or just maybe get my first nap in over a year. Excited that you guys are all here in the chat. We got a good one on deck for you today. Fun little Tuesday hangout sesh.
Taco Tuesday hangout sesh, a Cinco de Mayo hangout sesh. And we're going to jump right into this topic in just a moment. Is this a wedding gift?
Oh my goodness gracious.
From Gary Soto. Graver, consider this my wedding gift to you. Let's all contribute, chat. And Justin, here I was thinking Gary's feeling the pressure of us doing more and more live streams and feeling the obligation to continue his incredibly generous streak of donations. He hits us with a 5Xer today. $250 super chat. Gary Soto, thank you so much. I can't wait to tell Jessica about this wedding gift. She's going to be psyched. This is more than some of my aunts and uncles have given us, Justin.
I bet so. I bet that is the case. Well, that's why Gary's the best man at the wedding, and your aunts and uncles are not. That buys Gary the cake topper as well. I think you got to put him on top of the cake. Gary, your generosity is unbelievable. Your support for this show, your support for Justin Graver's wedding coming up here. We can't say enough good about you, Gary. We're glad you got this one in before your mom's credit card statement arrives. Your in-laws can bring me a Swiss watch. That's right. They do make good chocolate and good watches over there in Switzerland. So hopefully they're bringing something nice from overseas. Gary, all kidding aside, you are so appreciated. Thank you so much.
Jordan wants to know how he gets his own Gary Soto sugar daddy in his life. I don't know. Start a podcast and cross your fingers and hope people like you like it the way you guys apparently seem to like our show. We appreciate everybody for being here, hanging out. This is, as we've sort of alluded to, but haven't said explicitly yet today, our last podcast until May 18th. So we're going to miss, what, 8 normal shows, if we assume a show every single weekday. 8 regularly scheduled episodes, just sort of going to be what they call in the industry dark for the next week and a half. And we'll be back on May 18th. We hope and believe that the schedule release announcement will be that week that we return, which would be ideal for us. Hopefully it's not next week, Justin. They still haven't announced. The fact that they don't have a date on when the schedule is going to be released makes me skeptical that it would be next week, because usually they want to build some hype around this, even though it's mostly a nonsense event since we already know every team's opponents for 2026. But we don't know when they're going to play. We don't know what week or what time slot. So excited for that to come out when we get back. We'll just answer a couple of questions and then we'll get right into the topic at hand today here as we sit over 5 minutes into the show, not having yet discussed whether the Titans did enough to compete in 2026. Nash Rust, where is your fiance from in Switzerland? Been there 20 times or more. Wow, that's 19 more times than I've been there. She is from Lugano, which is in the Ticino state area on the south side of Switzerland. Let's hit a couple super chats, Justin, and then get right into business, huh? Oh my goodness gracious. H had Zimu. Is that right? I don't know. Something to make you feel better about both Canada and Switzerland losing to Bosnia at the World Cup. A $10 super chat. That's that will make us feel better, Justin. Do you feel better after Canada? I mean, do you care? I mean, you must care a little. I know you're a big Portugal supporter, but about Canada, is that...
I absolutely do care a little bit. Canada's gotten, you know, pretty decent at soccer over the last couple of years. We're obviously co-hosting the World Cup. That Canada-Bosnia game will be happening 20 minutes from my house. It's the first Canada game of the tournament, happening at BMO Field. I'm excited about it. I'll be very disappointed if they lose to Bosnia. Thanks for the super chat tip. No thank you for the comment, though. Go Canada. Excited about that one.
And another one from Lemdaz, 1999 Super Chat. What up? Love the content. I have a pod myself and still tune in every drop. Thanks for doing what you do. Wow. Thanks for tuning in to every episode, Lemdaz. Everybody go check out Lemdaz's podcast. Maybe fill the void while you and I are out, Justin, and give him a shout out here for the, we appreciate the Super Chat quite a bit.
Very generous Super Chat tip, Lemdaz. Thank you so much and best of luck with your own pod. We hope it's going well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll check it out while we're on break. All right. Let's dig into the conversation at hand. And you know what? This is kind of a fun way to get into it because Sir Kendall the Yapper thinks it's a good setup for Cam Ward and the Titans to have the NFC East on the schedule this year because, as he points out in the second comment, the NFC East gets a lot of media attention.
Yeah.
And if the Titans play well against those teams, a lot of the time it's going to be, what's wrong with the Eagles? Or why can't the Commanders regain their 2024 form? Or did the Cowboys, was it all hype for nothing? It won't be as much like, look at how good the Titans are. It'll be like, look at how disappointing these NFC East teams are. But I think you get the press anyway. You know, they get the highlight reel of Cam Ward throwing touchdowns against those NFC East teams. If that comes to play out, that would be good for the hype around this team.
Maybe it also means an extra primetime game or two, right? You never know. We didn't have a single one last year. Not that we necessarily... I mean, I thought they'd get one because of the number one pick, but we've proved that we didn't deserve one based, you know, going 3-14 2 years in a row. But hopefully that's on the up, and hopefully Cam Ward gets a primetime game this year.
Yeah, we got another super chat. No comment attached, just a $10 tip from Nash Russ.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Who's been to Switzerland 20 times or more.
Yeah. So thank you very much. PEMDAS, I don't know what this means other than parentheses, exponents, multiplication, division, addition, subtraction. The order of operations. I like it though. That's fun. Okay, Justin. Let's get down to business here. Lemdaz's podcast is Pressman Coverage. Oh, Pressman Coverage. It's like one of the best new Titans podcasts out there.
I've heard Studio of it. Yeah, I think great. Was Easton on there the other day, I think?
Easton was on there. I think that one was Monday morning. Zach Lyons was on there right before the draft. They were at Zach and Stoney's live draft event and did some fill-in coverage when Zach awesome. And Stoney needed a break. Definitely check out Pressman Coverage. Seen the clips floating around on social media. Great new Titans pod. I don't know how new, but it recently came to my attention. Within the last few months came to my attention. So check out Pressman Coverage. Yeah, Sir Kendall the Rapper recognizes it. That's y'all. Good. I'm not going to curse on the stream here. Justin, all right. Titans have a very, very busy and active offseason, starting with the hiring of a new head coach. Obviously, Brian Callahan fired after the week six loss to the Las Vegas Raiders last year. Mike McCoy takes over. The team gets better down the stretch. Post bye week, Cam Ward, 10 touchdowns to one interception, really showing that improvement under a coaching staff that has at least had a modicum of success at the NFL level in Mike McCoy's past. Not that he was ever super successful. Titans say thank you for your service, Mike McCoy. Go on, you can leave now. Conduct a real head coaching search, one of the most rigorous that we've seen. Interviewed, 16 candidates, I believe, for the job. Had requests out for a couple more. Guys that got hired elsewhere, never got to bring them in. So a really thorough search. It lands on Robert Saleh, who has a checkered past as a head coach, I would say, in terms of success. Best season with the New York Jets was only 7 wins, but they were in the playoff hunt down the stretch that season. Sunk by bad quarterback play, but a great defense. You're hoping that Robert Saleh can bring his defensive prowess to this Titans team. You see that take shape right away in free agency as the team goes out and remakes the defensive line, pays $100 million to the cornerback room, signs 3 new cornerbacks. They draft a linebacker. They draft an edge rusher. They have really remade the defense around Jeffrey Simmons, pairing him up with John Franklin Myers, great interior pass rusher from Denver with versatility. They did a ton on the defensive side of the ball. On offense, where the Titans were really bad last year, one of the worst offenses in the NFL, they add Wandale Robinson, they bring back Calvin Ridley on a restructured deal, they sign Daniel Bellinger, they draft Carnell Tate with the 4th overall pick, they return Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears as the 1A, 1B running back tandem, Gunnar Helm moves sort of into a tight end one, co-tight end one role, I would say, with Daniel Bellinger. You restock the wide receiver room. Shimmer Adike, promising young player. Elik Iyemanner, promising young player. Not going to be relied on for heavy production, barring injury in that room, but he got good depth there. The only big question about the Titans' offseason approach was the interior of the offensive line, where they cut starting center Lloyd Cushenberry. Right guard Kevin Zeitler hits free agency after his one-year contract expired. They don't make a move there outside of bringing in guys who, through this point in their career, have really only been depth or below-average starters in the league. So it leaves question marks there. They add a couple guys at that position on day 3 of the draft, guys that you hope can compete in training camp. But realistically, day 3 draft picks rarely start as rookies, so it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. Justin, did they do enough around Cam Ward to give him a chance to lead the Titans team into the playoff hunt? I won't say into the playoffs. I'll say into the playoff hunt. Where do you think this team stands from a realistic competitiveness level when you see them below the Miami Dolphins in power rankings around the NFL? Do you go, yeah, that's about right? Or do you have a different reaction?
No, I do think they're certainly better than a team like the Miami Dolphins. But your question is an interesting one because I've got more faith on what they did on defense than on offense. I think it's obvious, and people who follow Robert Saleh or know his defense, you know that the defensive line is what matters most to his scheme. And I think the approach signaled that, right? Like they really remade that defensive line around Jeffrey Simmons. They did, but they really remade it in Robert Saleh's vision. Right. I've mentioned a couple times, like Jermaine Johnson, John Franklin Myers, Jacob Martin, Solomon Thomas, and Jordan Elliott. Going out and getting five defensive linemen that previously played for the head coach is pretty wild, right? And most of them played for Aaron Whitecotton as well. I think four of five played for, of that I just mentioned played for the D-line coach Aaron Whitecotton too. So I think that, you know, that signal, that's where Robert Saleh wanted this to start, right? The D-line is the most important aspect of my defense. We're going to totally reshape it in my vision. This is what I see for this unit. And then I almost add a sixth. No, Keldrick Falk didn't play for Robert Saleh before, but he might have in a previous life as Eric Armstead, because the measurables are so damn similar. It's obvious that Keldrick Falk is a Robert Saleh guy through and through. So I've got a lot of faith on what they did defensively. I think they still, of course, they lack depth at corner, but I like the starters they brought in. I'm excited about seeing Cedric Gray on this defense and excited about them drafting Anthony Hill to play in this defense. So love what they did on defense. On offense, obviously, I've got more questions, right? Like we talked about them potentially needing to upgrade the running back room with the Jeremiah Love. They don't really do that unless Nick Singleton is going to totally stun us, right, as a rookie. Obviously, the interior of the offensive line is a major question mark, right? With are they starting Austin Schlotman and Jackson Slater in week one? Does Cordell Volson win that right guard job? Do the day three rookies play a role whatsoever in the competition? Major, major question marks there on the inside. The reason, I guess I should separate these things, but the reason I have any confidence in this offense, well, actually, there's a number of reasons, but my faith in Cam Ward, you know, comes first and foremost. Love the way he played post-bye. I do think he's going to take a big step as a year two quarterback. I've got a lot of faith in Brian Daboll as the offensive coordinator, and placing Cam Ward's development in Brian Daboll's hands makes me feel good. And I also really like what they've done at wide receiver. I think they're deep at the position. You know, I think Robinson might have been a little overpaid, but I think they get a good high-volume weapon potentially for an offensive coordinator that knows how to use them, obviously. The Carnell Tate selection at number four was clearly done to, you know, invest in Cam Ward's development. I love Carnell Tate in this system. And I also like, you know, they bring back Calvin Ridley, and the sophomore receivers are hopefully going to take a step. I love the wide receiver depth. I love Cam Ward in year two. I love entrusting Cam Ward to Brian Daboll. And I also like offensive line coach Carmen Brasillo and what he might be able to get out of this line where we have some question marks. So I think from a personnel standpoint, they obviously did more on defense. But how could you not be excited about year two Cam Ward, especially when you factor in they went out and got hit a home run in the offensive coordinator with Brian Daboll?
I think what excites me most about where this team could be this season is that I want to say, you know, this is a phrase that Dan Hansis used a lot on Heed the Call this past year, and that I think we've thrown around a couple of times throughout the Brian Callahan era, but is that the Titans have adults in the room now, right? When they had Rand Carthon as the general manager and Brian Callahan as the head coach, with Chad Brinker as this, like, overseer of all, it was, those guys were not experienced in those roles. They didn't really know exactly what they were doing. They weren't a competent organization from a team-building standpoint, from an on-the-field product standpoint, from a scheming and preparing for game day standpoint. They simply didn't know what they were doing, right? Then you bring in a couple of guys. Excuse me, Bean's getting up. Bye, Bean. Then they bring in guys who are, that you couldn't have more experience than what they have right now. It started with the hiring of Mike Borgonzi, who, of course, had never been a general manager before, but spent years and years, over a decade, in the Chiefs organization, watched them build a team from where the Titans have been the past couple of seasons to a contender, a fringe contender with Alex Smith, to a Super Bowl favorite every season level team, best team in, like, the model organization of what you hope to build in terms of, like, a dynasty. Mike Borgonzi was there for all of that, right? So he comes in, he brings in a bunch of guys who have been general managers before, surrounds himself with experience, with guys he can rely on, ask questions to, get advice from, while he ultimately leads the charge. Guys like Reggie McKenzie, Dave Ziegler, upcoming guys like Dave Sagony and Dan Sagony, excuse me.
Dan Sagony and John Solge is in that room
yes.
as well.
So a lot of great talent in the executive, in that, you know, management room, general manager space. And then they hire Robert Saleh, who has been a head coach, obviously, before, who has been a defensive coordinator for, you know, esteemed, high-ranking, one of the best defensive coordinators coached for an organization that is always going to be, you know, a team that is favored preseason to make the playoffs, a team that has been to multiple NFC championship games, even a Super Bowl, one Super Bowl. Did they go to two Super Bowls? No, they went to one Super Bowl. Was Saleh there for that Super? Yeah, 2019. That was his last year there, right? One of his last, anyway. Saleh, lots of experience. They hire offensive coordinator Brian Daboll, who was a head coach, obviously, of the New York Giants. They hire Gus Bradley, who's been a defensive coordinator and even a head coach in many stops around the league. They retain Bones Fossil, who even Bones Fossil has been an interim head coach in his career. So they have four former head coaches on the staff now. One of them is the head coach, of course, now. But still, tons of experience. It's the complete opposite setup of what they had when Brian Callahan was in charge. And I think what that means to me is it raises the floor of this team. Like, yes, these guys aren't going to get overmatched, outsmarted, outcoached from a preparation standpoint. They're not going to have, I mean, they may get blown out a few times because I still think there is a talent deficiency on the roster, but they're not going to look the way some Callahan games looked, where the team's just has no idea what to expect from the opponent and just gets run off the field in the first half. I think of like the Commanders game or the Lions game in the 2024 season where they just got absolutely wiped off the field. Those kinds of floor-raising moves give me hope that this season will at least be like fun and competitive and we won't be totally checked out by week 7 the way we were the last couple of years. And I think that you can't overstate, in my opinion, what good coaching can really do for an NFL team. You see what Ben Johnson came in and did for the Bears. You see what Liam Cohen came in and did for the Jags. Mike Vrabel for the Patriots. Mike Vrabel dealing with some stuff. Still a great head coach, though. It doesn't take away from what he did on the field. Going
good
to
head
the
coach,
Super Bowl.
Bad husband, right? It's probably the way.
There you go. I mean, Sean Payton in Denver. Like, you know, like when Jim Harbaugh in LA, and now they haven't, like, achieved what they hoped to achieve, but they've been a perennial playoff team since Harbaugh got there, right? So it's like when you bring in a floor-raising head coach and a guy like Brian Daboll to run the offense, it gives me a lot of hope that like whatever they did in free agency, whatever they did in the draft is almost less relevant to me than the fact that you now have guys in charge who know what the heck they're doing. So that to me raises the floor. The players they added raised the ceiling. It all adds up to me to a team that should be much more competitive in 2026. Justin, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. You'll respond to that, and we'll talk about what are now more competitive. What does that really mean in terms of realistic expectations? On the other side, we will tell you. Be right back.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. Forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS.
To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back, audio audience. Justin, before we dive into this this other side of this conversation, we've had a few super chats come in. I want to go back through and hit them here. So Rocky Top Titans, oh my goodness gracious, says, time for tequila shots, hashtag Cinco de Mayo. Also, Justin, you are my favorite podcaster. Winky, laughy face, tighten up. I think the winky, laughy faces are that he said, Justin, and you and I can each safely, for our own ego's sake, assume he's talking about ourselves, and we don't have to go deeper on that because nobody wants to be disappointed, right? So we're both Rocky Top Titans' favorite podcaster, Justin.
Yeah, I thought he was talking about me. I thought it was painfully obvious in the tone of the sentence. But no, thank you so much, Rocky Top Titans. We really appreciate the super chat tip. And thanks for the compliment. Happy Cinco de Mayo. Enjoy your day responsibly, of course.
Nice. And we got Rod Happenstance. Mello, our fate is decided tonight. Biggest day in Toronto Leafs history. It's McKenna or bust. Thoughts on you got to take that. I don't know.
I think I got to read this one. Thoughts on Chaika. Anyway, here is 1967 for good luck tonight. Our year, tighten up and go Leafs go. Aren't familiar, very cheeky with the tip here. 1967 was the last time the Leafs won the Stanley Cup. They are going through one heck of a drought on winning the Stanley Cup. And in terms of tonight, maybe no one cares, but the NHL draft lottery is tonight. And the Leafs are, listen to this, Graver, the predicament I'm in, they are expected to get the sixth overall pick. The problem is they traded their first round pick, but it's top five protected. So they literally get to keep the pick if the lottery ball hits five or better. But if it's six, they got to give up the pick to who they traded it to. And they are starved for assets right now. It would be devastating if they lose that first round pick. They really need it to be one, two, three, four, or five so they can keep it. Isn't that a crazy predicament? If it's number six, they've got to give it up. And they need that pick so, so bad. So, yes, we will be following the NFL draft lottery closely tonight. Thank you so much, Rod Happenstance, for the super chat tip. I'll quickly, because no one cares, John Chaika is who they hired as the GM. Very controversial appointment. I don't hate it. I don't get why everyone's up in arms about this hire. The guy started a multi-million dollar analytics company and got hired as a GM before he turned 26. No, I don't think that's a bad hire. The guy's obviously brilliant. I hope John Chaika proves all these media sharks wrong.
All right, Justin. Thanks for that. For all our Toronto Maple Leaf fans in the live stream, you got some exclusive.
Hey, Rob Easter says, I care, Mel. There's our other Toronto Maple Leaf
there
fan.
You go.
We got a couple of people in the live stream here.
Two people who care about that. Justin, Titans expectations, 2026, realistic. Did you have a follow-up comment to my talking about?
I did, yes.
Yeah.
I agree with a lot of what you said. I certainly think that the coaching staff alone raises the floor for this coming season. I think the roster is undeniably better than it's been in 2 years, and that hopefully raises the floor for this season. Obviously, not to beat a dead horse, but the interior offensive line is the big question. And then the other question I have, I think we've all admit, not even a question, I think it's unfortunately a fact. I think we've all admitted that this rebuild isn't over, right? And where the problem lies right now, you've gotten better, but you're still probably fine-tuning the depth, right? Like, we've talked about the lack of depth in the cornerback room, for example. What happens when they start picking up an injury or two there? Can Joshua Williams come in and play quality football? Does Marcus Harris live up to the expectations maybe that Robert Saleh has now placed on him? What happens at, defensive line depth? Is there enough there? I think corner is a huge one. The secondary, safety is a big one too. So for me, I think where this roster is still a little bit behind, offensive tackle depth, right? Like if they start suffering injuries to these positions, I don't know that they've got the depth at those spots yet to truly, truly compete. Now, with that said, I know you didn't ask me for a prediction, but I fully believe the definition of compete, I guess, is where I'm struggling with. I think they've done enough to be the New Orleans Saints of last season. you know, to be like a 7-win football team that I fully believe is a decent competitive, like that's a competitive football team to me. Yeah. A 7-10 football team is competitive. Hopefully that means you're in the hunt. You're competitive every week. Like I think they've done enough with that. And as Angry Fetus just points out, I'd be happy with 7 wins. That would be successful. That's my realistic expectation for this team this year, to be honest with you. It's May 5th. It's way too early. If you asked me for a way too early record prediction, I'd probably go with 7-10. And I think when you pose the question, I think that's competitive. Have they done enough? I just want to see them take a sizable step forward, which shouldn't be hard, right, from the last 2 years. I think they've positioned themselves to do that, both from a roster and coaching standpoint. So, yes, I do think they are ready to, quote-unquote, be competitive. Maybe that's different from competing, but I think they're ready to be competitive.
Yeah, I see this team like pulling off a couple of wins that nobody expected them to pull off going into the game, maybe even like early in the season when expectations are still really low for this team. 7 wins would be more than the past 2 years combined. So if you are a person who wants them to be better right away, like I think pause your expectations a little bit and take a look at the reality of how much of an improvement that is. I will also say, going from 3 wins to 7 wins is a lot easier in the NFL than going from 7 wins to 10 wins or from 10 wins to 12 or 13 wins.
Sure.
Like going from basement dweller to mediocre is pretty easy for NFL teams. And we see that happen all the time. We see teams go from basement to middle, back to basement, from basement to middle, all the way up to the upper echelon teams. But I think with the coaching staff that they have, the players that they've added this offseason, especially on the defensive side, like, where do you think this defense could realistically rank? John points out in the comments, I just want to win back-to-back games, LMAO. Yeah,
I haven't done that in a while.
2022 season was the last time they won back-to-back games. That Packers win on Thursday Night Football was their last consecutive win.
That sounds impossible. That sounds literally impossible.
Three full seasons without having a back-to-back win. 3.5 seasons, really, because that was like, what, week 10, 11?
That was about week 10 or 11, yeah.
So it's been a long, long time for this Titans team. In 2026, can they do it? I mean, we will kind of do more serious win-loss predictions once the schedule comes out, react to the primetime games and all that. But for now, we're talking about realistic expectations. I think another thing to keep in mind is that the NFL is a small sample size, fluky-ass sport where random things happen and teams win games they shouldn't win and lose games they should win. And you can go 13-4 one season and regress massively the next. You can go on a miracle run to the NFC Championship, Washington Commanders, and then be picking in the top 7 the following season. Those kinds of things happen often in this league. I look at a team like the Bears last year, who won a bunch of games on last minute, fourth quarter, fluky, whatever, like... Can the Titans have a miracle season like that? Can this team get lucky at something for once in the last 10 years? Like, can they just have a game where they get lucky? I guess you could argue the Week 5 win over the Cardinals was that game. But where they just got lucky. I mean, how many turnovers did the Cardinals have that should not have been turnovers? Ball bounce off Kyler Murray's face mask, fumble and interception. The Titans recover for a touchdown, drop the ball as they're crossing the goal line. But if they do all that, do they get Jeremiah Love? Who knows? I think that's an important thing to remember. So when we're projecting the realistic outcome for this team, it's like a range. It's like, could they win this to this, you know, and on the high end, it's like if they get these lucky bounces, if the fourth quarter comeback happens, then they're on the higher end. If those things happen against them or they miss field goals they should make or they turn the ball over in fluky ways or whatever, then it's on the lower end. But I think that realistic range to me, Justin, is like floor for this team. I want to say it's like 5 wins. Now, like, there's always the injury caveats where it's like, okay, the bottom could completely fall out and, like, anything's possible in this world. And, like, 0-17 is, like, technically, theoretically possible, just as 17-0 in a Super Bowl is theoretically, technically possible. We're going to remove the extreme ends from this range and just say that, like, realistically, I think the floor is about 5 wins. I think this defense could be really good. I think it could be a top 15 defense fairly easily. I think they have a chance if it all comes together and the pass rush actually works. And, you know, Femi Oladejo takes a step and Kevin Winston and Marcus Harris take steps, you know, to be contributing players. And Anthony Hill Jr. is good quickly and starts at middle linebacker. Like, if all those things happen, this could be a top 8 defense in the NFL. And I don't think it would be that shocking. I think realistically, you're looking at somewhere in that 10 to 15 range. And like, that's a huge step up from where they've been, especially on the talent level, but also just Robert Saleh has coordinated good defenses everywhere he's been, almost every year he's been there.
Yeah, I mean, I think this defense is going to be good. I do think it's got to stay healthy because, like I said, I think depth at corner, safety, like I think they have some issues there. But even the defensive line, like I mentioned it earlier, but I should say, like as long as you don't lose Jeffrey Simmons or John Franklin Myers, in all honesty, they could afford to lose Jacob Martin or a Femi Oladejo, right? Like they're going to roll out 8, 9, 10 guys there. So I feel like they've got some depth there. I like the depth at linebacker too, right? Like James Williams, Cody Barton, potentially as your, you know, 3 and 4 Mo Diabate kind of thing. So I like what they've got going at some of those spots. If you're someone who's optimistic and think this is, you know, a 7 and 10 team, if you want to be more optimistic and be more positive, the big unknown, you talk about injuries, you talk about lucky bounces. Let's talk about something that they can control. It's what kind of step does Cam Ward take in year two? Like, let's not underrate that, right? Like, if the way Cam Ward was playing ball down the stretch, he was really, really good, right? Like you mentioned, after, was it 10 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, 1 intercept, whatever it was after the bye week, he played some high-level football with a worse supporting staff and a worse coaching staff, undeniably, right? So if Cam Ward, if you think on paper, this is a 6-7-win football team, it's certainly within the realm of possibility that a breakout Cam Ward sophomore year elevates that to a 9-10 win team. And maybe we're shocked and we're so happy. If it's within the realm of possibility, because I am got the utmost belief in Cam Ward stepping into year two here. I love, again, the coaching staff, the offensive coordinator hire. I love what they've done at wide receiver. Someone posed the question earlier, is this the deepest receiver room in quite some time? Sure, it doesn't have, we don't think it has the high end, you know, A.J. Brown as a rookie type of, we'll see on Carnell Tate, right? But obviously, we're not going to sit here and project it to be better than maybe those rooms were, but, or better high end talent than those rooms had. But 1 through 5, they got 5 legitimate NFL receivers who could help them this year, who will make an impact. So when you pair that with Cam Ward, I really, you know, you never know. I'll kind of end this portion of the conversation with this. The team ceiling is determined by Cam Ward's improvements. That is true. You just look at what Drake May did for the New England Patriots last season. Look what Caleb Williams did for the Chicago Bears. You really don't know, but I'm really pumped to see how far Cam Ward can take this team in year two.
Yeah. I totally agree. I want to address this comment here. Oh, wait, sorry. This is a response to
the I wanted to address that one, the one that you're grabbing as well.
I cannot find it. The comment was, given that Daboll is likely a 1-year rental, and I sort of want to just like stop you right there. I am kind of torn on this.
Me too.
Idea that Daboll is a 1-year. I'm still looking for the comment. Whatever, I can't find it. The comment was something like, given that Daboll is a 1-year rental, and I didn't even read past that point because I don't think Daboll.
Are you worried about like the personnel fitting his scheme? Like they brought in so many guys from the Giants. Are you worried about personnel fitting his scheme?
So I'm not going to go conspiracy conjecture here and say that I think that they've likely had some level of reassurance from Brian Daboll that this is not just a 1-year rental, because they go sign Wandale Robinson, not to a 1-year contract, to a 4-year contract. They signed Daniel Bellinger, not to a 1-year contract, to a 3-year contract. First of all, if Daboll was planning on leaving after 1 year to go be a head coach, wouldn't he want all the guys that he just targeted in free agency to at some point kind of come with him again? Like he wants...
You're getting a little off the rail for my... Like he would jump at the opportunity, wouldn't he?
Maybe. It depends on the... I think second time around head coaches wait for an opportunity that isn't just like any opportunity, right? Clint Kubiak going to the Raiders, like second year, highly sought after John Harbaugh, not second year, but John Harbaugh wasn't going to the Raiders, right? They have to hire somebody who's, they have to take a chance on a first-time head coach. Cardinals have to take a chance on Mike LaFleur, last team to hire a head coach this cycle. They're not getting the highest level candidates, right? Because the highest level candidates, which Brian Daboll might be, sort of get to choose where they go. So after a year where you have 10 teams fire their head coaches, including some of the best possible situations for a first-year head coach to step into, like the Ravens and the Bills, or if you look at it the other way, a completely blank slate like the Dolphins. I mean, I wouldn't consider that a high position, but you get my point. It's like you can do whatever you want with that team, or you have like established quarterbacks who are MVP-level players who have been deep in the playoffs, and it's your job to take them to the next level in Baltimore and Buffalo. Like, you couldn't ask for a better setup than that. I'd be shocked if there was a setup like that next offseason for Brian Daboll to like take his pick and go to. Secondly, he hired Carmen Brasillo, has been pointed out. He hired Shea Tierney, as has been pointed out. He hired Greg Lewis as his wide receivers coach, although there wasn't overlap there. We've heard some stuff about their relationship. They bring in Marquand Manuel, who clearly was like a Brian Daboll suggestion on the defensive backside, considering they coached together in New York. Like, all these guys come to Nashville, they've got to view this as a multi-year plan. Like, we're going to go build the Titans into this amazing team. The other side of it is there are going to be more hot head coaching candidate names than Brian Daboll next offseason. I tweeted this out a long time ago, right after the head coaching search finished. But like Brian Daboll, I think he had 3 head coaching interviews. There are guys who had 4, 5, 6, 7 interviews who didn't take a head coaching job. There are going to be guys that are up and coming, the Nate Shieldhouses of the world, that teams would rather take a chance on the unknown possible ceiling upside, is this the next Sean McVay, over the known Brian Daboll. We saw what he did in New York. Yeah, he did good stuff with Cam Ward and the Titans offense last season, but like, are we going to sell the farm to get this guy to come in here over one of these like hotter, younger, up-and-comer names? Not to mention the fact that like Mike Tomlin could be in the mix next offseason. Sean McDermott could be in the mix next offseason. Guys that are coordinators now that have been head coaches also, like there are guys like Brian Daboll, like
Chris Shula didn't get a job either, right? Like Chris Shula
didn't get a job either. There's so many up-and-coming guys. And then there's going to be somebody who Clint Kubiak's it this year and emerges as somebody we've never heard of or didn't know would be a future head coach that is like the top of the market name as well. And how many openings realistically are there going to be? Like, usually there's between 6 and 9, right? This past year there were 10, which was a crazy number. If there are only 5 or 6, that takes Brian Daboll's chances of being hired away after 1 year down even more. The other side of this is if Brian Daboll leaves after 1 year for a head coaching job, that means the season was finally worth it. This will not be a Matt LaFleur coordinates the 28th ranked Titans offense and then leaves after one season to go be the Packers head coach situation. That's just not, I just don't see that happening with Daboll because he's a retread. He's got to really show that he's earned his second chance by having like a top 3 offense in the NFL. And if the Titans have a top 3 offense in the NFL and it's only for one season, I'll take it and be pretty happy because it's been have we ever seen that in Nashville? A top 3 offense from this Titans team? I don't think we have. So maybe Arthur Smith had it 1 year, 2019, second half. If you just isolate like week 6 through 17, maybe. But yeah, I would be shocked if there aren't other names who are hotter than Brian Daboll for next head coaching cycle. Maybe he gets an interview or two. I would be pretty surprised if he became the hottest head coaching candidate. I think that's like Nashville lens bias. It's like when you walk into a crowded room, Justin, and you think like, man, is everybody staring at me? And like in reality, it's like, no, nobody's actually noticed or paid any attention to you. They're all focused on themselves as well. But you think that there are more eyes on you than there really are. I feel like that's how Titans fans view Brian Daboll as a hot head coaching candidate, is like, well, we think he could be great, so everyone must think it. It's like, I don't think that's the reality. I just don't.
I'll keep it shorter than you did. I don't know how you didn't run out of breath on that one, to be honest with you. A couple things. I mean, I agree with most of what you said. Like, I think he'll probably be in the mix, but I assume if he's in the mix, Cam Ward had a phenomenal season, and I think we'll be very happy. If he gets a job, it's because Cam Ward just exploded and took off, and I don't think that's a bad thing. The reason I don't think he'll get a job, a lot of the reasons you mentioned, Chris Shula, Sean McDermott, Mike Tomlin. Someone pointed out in the chat, Grant Udinski. That's another hot up-and-comer, Nate Shieldhouse. Yeah. But there's a lot of hot up-and-comers, and I don't think there's going to be many openings. 10 this year. Someone pointed out in the chat, I think there was 9 a year ago. So 19 openings over the last 2 years. If we only get 5 openings, you know, that's a really much smaller. You know, NFL's crazy, so never say never. But I am expecting it to be a down off season for how many openings there are. And then you combine that with all the others, you know, the other candidates we just mentioned, who are probably going to be hotter than Brian Daboll, we assume. And I'd also point out, if the Titans do lose them, yeah, you know, it would suck. But I also think they're preparing for that possibility. You know, I think they bring in, you know, Shea Tierney as his quarterback's coach, as maybe a potential future coordinator. Don't underestimate Luke Stecker, you know, or Luke Stalker, excuse me, who they retained on this staff. I think they see him as a potential future coordinator. Maybe someone like Carmen Brasillo, you know, the O-line coach, gets a look as well. So I think he's going to be here for at least 2 years, but I also think they're, you know, prepared for the worst.
Yeah, I think it'll be at least 2 years too. Okay, Justin, final realistic expectations. Titans on that in the hunt graphic. I think so. And maybe this is just like two-tone colored bias, and I'm getting optimistic because it's hope season and cope season and it's the off season and every team got better, but the Titans got better. How much better did they get? Like, I think they got a ton better from the coaching staff that actually knows what they're doing to having a wide receiver room with, like you said, 5 legitimate NFL caliber players to a defensive front that, while they don't have a premier edge rusher, they should still have a pretty ferocious pass rush anchored by Jeffrey Simmons and John Franklin Myers with enough waves of edge guys to at least stay fresh and come at you 100 miles per hour every single snap the way that they're going to rotate those guys. Even if they're not the most skilled or the most talented or the most explosive edge rushers, like I feel like they have enough guys to make life difficult on the quarterback. Couple that with the upgrades to the secondary, Alante Taylor and Cordell Flott, like, no, they're not Christian Gonzalez or Derek Stingley, but they are starting caliber corners who are going to be helped by that defensive front, by quarterbacks being forced to get the ball out quicker than they want to. I think the defense could be really good, and I think the offense, like, a lot hinges on, number one, as you said, health. Like, we'll just assume general health. Yeah, they'll lose a few guys here and there because that's the NFL season, but assuming general health, if that interior of the offensive line isn't a massive detriment to the success of the offense, I feel like the offense could be top half of the league offense. It could be slightly better than that. If Cam Ward is everything that we hope he can be, and Brian Daboll, like, works the magic like he did with, you know, Daniel Jones' first year, when Brian Daboll's first year in New York, Daniel Jones, and they go 9-7-1 or 9-8 or whatever, and they make the playoffs that first year. Or what he did with Josh Allen in 2020, 2021, when they really broke out, Stephon Diggs arrives. Like, is Stephon Diggs that Carnell Tate kind of player for them? Potentially, like, I don't know, but 4th overall pick, like, I think the ceiling for this team is bumping up against 8, 9, 10 wins if everything goes exactly perfect and Cam Ward becomes, like, if Cam Ward has a Drake May level leap from year 1 to year 2, this team could win 10 games and they'd be the most surprising story in the NFL. Is it more likely they are like a Saints from last year? Yeah, probably. Is there a world where they could be like a Panthers from last year, go 8-9? They probably don't win the AFC South at 8-9, but 8-9 will be a tremendous step forward. So that's sort of what my realistic expectations are for this team this year. They did enough to be more competitive on a week-to-week basis. They did enough to get themselves in the playoff hunt in that back third, the last third of the season. I don't think they actually make the playoffs this year. I don't think they actually win 9 or 10 games this year, but I think they take a big step forward, and that's what you want to see, I think, in Mike Borgonzi's second year, Robert Saleh's first year, Cam Ward's second year. That would be a satisfying season, in my view.
I agree. I think they take a step. I think they win. Again, I think they're like a 7-10 football team is probably my realistic expectation. And that gets you on the graphic, in the hunt, right? Like, that was one of the questions that was posed, a really good question, I believe it was by Jordan Pace here in the comments. Yeah, I do think they're in the hunt. Also, because I don't think there's like a 12-13 win team in the AFC South. I mean, I think the Texans are pretty good.
Texans are closest, and the Jags won 13 games last year.
I think they regress a little bit, probably, in Jacksonville. And Houston, I think, is within that tier. but I don't know that there's a truly elite football team in the AFC South. So hopefully the Titans are on that graphic. As you said, expect them to get better. We've got higher expectations. Hard not to be better than last year and the year before. We just want to see forward. At the end of the day, sports fans just want to know that their team is moving in the right direction, right? That's all we want. You want progress. Doesn't have to be unrealistic. You just want to see that there's a plan in place. They are executing that plan successfully. We got a bunch of super chat tips that we should probably hit.
Let's hit those and then close out this show, our last show until May 18th. We appreciate everyone hanging out with us today. Oh my goodness gracious. Wally says, congrats and good luck on the wedding, Graver. Considering Dayball is likely... Oh, this is it. Oh, I found it. Considering Dayball is likely a one-year rental, how flexible are our offensive pieces in fitting whoever follows Dayball? I mean, we didn't really answer that, but I will say, like, I think you have a pretty good setup if Dable did have to leave after one season, in the sense that, like, you probably are getting a new running back next year, unless Nick Singleton becomes, you know, a starting caliber guy, or maybe he's like part one of a two-part tandem. I don't think Tajay Spears or Tony Pollard are here next year, but Bellinger and Helm, pretty interchangeable tight ends. Both guys are decent enough blockers and good enough pass catchers. You got a true X in Carnell Tate. I assume Calvin Ridley's not here next year. You got a true Z in Shim Dike, and you got a true slot in Wandale Robinson, who will still be here next year. So I think that basically fits any offense. You got two tight ends if you want to run heavy. You got three good receivers if you want to run 11 personnel. Like, I think they're set up fairly well, regardless of who the OC is, but I hope Brian Dayball, and I believe Brian Dayball, will still be here in 2027.
Fully agree. And I 11 personnel, they'll have to upgrade at running back regardless of who the coordinator is. Thank you so much, Wally, for the super chat tip. We really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. We have another one here from Rod Happenstance. Is this the second?
This was the 1967 Leafs super chat tip earlier.
Another $20 Canadian. He says, rudely forgot to congratulate Graver on his wedding and hiring Raptors legend. You got to do this part.
Really? The Mavericks hired him and you don't know how to say it. Former Toronto Raptors. Sorry?
I've read his name since they hired him. I haven't heard anyone
Masai
say it.
Masai Ujiri, who was the GM of the NBA championship Toronto Raptors team, now trying to do the same in Dallas. Go on, yep. Raver.
Executive of the year in, 2013, I think, and then won the 2019 NBA championship with Kawhi Leonard. Yes, two equally important events in my life. Absolutely, Rod. I've watched every MCA ep since 2024, first time live. Wow, that's... Wow. Thank you for being here today. Best Titans pod of all time. Yada, yada, ding me, I don't care.
Rod gets a ding. I'm so glad you dinged him for the yada yada. You are in that one, Rod. Thank you so much for the generosity on today's show.
We got one from Stingray VFL 999 Super Chat. It calls it the membership fee for the number one Titans pod. Graver, savor every second of your wedding day. It'll be one of the greatest days of your life. It'll be over in a flash. Go all out. No regrets. Tighten up, fellas. Thank you so much for the well wishes and the word of advice there, Stingray. Plan to soak up every single minute. And we got another $10 here from Nash Rust. Congrats on your forthcoming nuptials, JG. Wishing you both the greatest happiness. See you when you return on the Best Titans podcast. You guys are too kind. Thank you so much for this one, Nash Rust. Thank you for everyone in the chat. I'm not going to hit every single one, but so many of you wishing me good luck or congratulations. I really appreciate it. It means a lot to me that I have the support of the Audible Army behind me and that you guys aren't just like boycotting us today or mad at us for taking the break we're about to take. No, you're like, go enjoy your time. We appreciate you guys. We appreciate the community we're building here. There's like conversations going on in the live chat right now that we're not even referencing and we don't need to because they're having their own thing. And I like what we're doing here, Justin.
Is the married version of white gravy whipped cream. That's a great one by Iron Grits.
Maybe so. We'll have to find out, you know? We won't know till Saturday night, right? And then we'll find out on Sunday if I become whipped cream. Okay, Justin, you got anything else you want to say? You want to do, should we do a record prediction just for the hell of it? Like, it's not even serious or it's like way too early, but we could do it just because it's fun.
I'm going to go 7-10. I've kind of said it a couple times. I'm not going to not go 7. Did I take yours?
Yeah, so I'm going to change it and go 8-9 just to be a little more positive, because why not?
You're going to $1 me like Bob Barker on The Price is Right? You're just going to...
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ray School, my word, one word of advice for Graver on his wedding day. Make sure that both you and your wife eat. The day goes by fast and someone needs to make sure you guys have fuel for the post show. Appreciate that. We do have time set aside while our guests are at cocktail hour after we take photos. We're sneaking to a little back room to eat our dinner so that during the actual dinner, we can go around table to table, shake the babies and kiss the hands. And yes, Jabba Chunk, love no matter what. In this case, it's the love I will have for my soon-to-be wife. In other cases, it was Jeremiah love no matter what. But today, no. It's the love for my wife. Justin, is that it? We're done? Let's say goodbye?
That's going to do it for today's episode of the Music City Audible. I want to wish my partner best of luck on Saturday. I'm so happy for him. So excited for him that him and Jessica are taking this beautiful step. They deserve each other, and I mean that in the best way possible. They're going to have a beautiful, beautiful day with their loved ones. Jay Graver, the best man, is a phenomenal human being, a phenomenal father. Jessica's family coming in from Switzerland, and this is going to be such an incredible day. I'm so happy for you, friend, partner. Graver and I have obviously become really good friends. We text all the time. We don't just do this show together. And I'm so, so happy and excited for him. I'm almost getting emotional here. I can't wait. And thank you to everyone for understanding why we're taking this break. I could have run a bunch of live streams while Graver wasn't here, but I think it makes more sense for us to go dark for a couple of days. We will be back on the 18th, and we hope all of you will too. We've got a lot of faith in this fan base. You know, we're going to tell you the truth, and a lot of faith in this community, a lot of podcast. You can't do that. You're going to lose. We believe in the Audible Army. We totally believe you guys will be back with us on the 18th. Looking forward to the wedding live stream. Can you imagine? Outstanding stuff. Appreciate the heck out of you guys. And we'll be back on the 18th, and we believe that you will be here with us as well. Until then, y'all stay safe out there. Best of luck to Graver on his wedding, and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.